Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. And this time, I actually sound fine. That's great.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll work.
So this episode is for August 26, 2016. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me, as always, is Filippo Dinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, and Teresa Salmon.
Hello,
everybody. So, We got some stuff we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking some about the Olympics. I'm going to talk a bit about the Tales series, the video game series specifically. We're going to talk about Bleach, and we're going to have another Gamer Mag Remembrances and some other things. All this and more on tonight's episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off. We got to find out what have we been up to. So, Phil, what have you been doing?
So I'm still listening to the Stormlight Archive number 2, Words of Radiance. That book is long. Yeah, I'll point that out. But it's also one of those books that even though it's enormous, it's incredibly hard to put down. And there's some pretty interesting characters in there. Like, King Taravangian, who seems like a dolt in the first book, and then you find out he's sort of lively insane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's that dude. And of course, well, you've read it, so you know Sadeus and his assholery. Mm. Yeah, he's not a very good person. Let's just put it that way. So I've been reading that. Kind of downloaded a couple of more books from my Audible library so that I've got them on my PC, because I'm going to be moving soon, and I'm going to have some days without internet, so I need to have something to do. Mm-hmm. So I got that going. Been watching, some Mythbusters here and there, because those are always fun to go through. Yeah. Giant whirlpools. Those are kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Especially when they don't really exist. Yeah. Apart from that, well, my whole vinyl hobby is still going strong. You know, remember a few months ago that talking about that turntable I got off eBay and the issues that I had with it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, those issues are sorted out now. It's working great. It sounds great. One little problem left, and that's kind of my fault because I forgot to tell the repair guy to look for it. So it's one of those things, if you don't know to look for it, you're probably not going to spot it. And that's the strobe light on the front is not lit, so I'll get that fixed. Yeah, but, not a big deal. Well, I've been doing, some work for Funky Moose Records to get his used inventory into his storefront. So that's been an interesting experience as far as Python programming goes. So doing that, and it's actually paid off a little bit because I got a nice little order of records for free, basically.
Nice.
Just for doing that. And it's some pretty good ones. Ended up with, Rush 2112 and Alter Bridge, Blackbird. Those are two that I ordered and are coming soon. Got the 97 album Phantasma by Cornelius. I'm not sure if you know about them, Brandon. They're kind of a little experimental Japanese band. Very, very freaky music.
Cornelius is what they're called?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good stuff. You might actually dig it. Got that. Got a copy of ZZ Top's Eliminator coming. And, of course, the gem of all that was an original Canadian pressing of Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. So it's like, yeah, I think I made off pretty well with that little exchange.
Very nice.
Yeah. Especially since the Dark Side of the Moon was near mint. So, yeah, $50 retail value. Got it for nothing, for just my time. And of course, throughout this entire week, it's basically moving. So packing and realizing, holy crap, I have a lot of stuff. It's like, I hate moving. It's like, where did all this stuff come from? And how did I figure out how to put it in here to begin with? So yeah, tomorrow I'm going to be finishing up the last bit of packing. Probably start running some boxes over there, since I have the key already. And on Monday, I'll be moving all the big stuff over there. And by Monday night, I'll be in the new place. So,
cool.
Yeah, this may affect whether or not we have a Day Zero update. It hopefully won't, but it might. So I'll have to I'll keep you guys appraised for that one.
Okay.
Hmm. So that's my week.
All right. What about you, Pat?
Back to video editing. I posted another sound off video today. This time about what on earth is going on over at Konami. I thought they left the game industry when Metal Gear Solid 5 was done and went on to do Pachi Slot stuff. Mm-hmm. Then they went and announced Metal Gear Survive at Gamescom, and I've got my theories about what caused that whole thing to happen. But more importantly, is this game going to be good, and what does it mean for Konami's future? So that's kind of the stuff I touched on. It was one of my shorter videos. Not quite as short as the Final Fantasy XV wait mode commentary that I did, but close.
Yeah, it's about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. I just wanted to get a video out this week because I wasn't able to last week for reasons.
Yeah. Mainly,
if anyone heard me on the latest Day Zero update, you know exactly what I sounded like.
Yeah.
God.
I did not care to do any extra voice work that week.
Yeah.
So it's good to be back on that. What?
A lot better this week.
I feel a lot better this week. I now have to respect my age a lot more and realize I can't go acting like I'm still, you know, 19 and invincible.
Well, you'll repeat that lesson a few times before it sinks in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm usually a pretty quick study.
That is a good thing.
And other than that, with Bleach ending, and we'll be talking about quite a bit of that later on in the show. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just looking for another epic anime or manga series to fill the void, and I'm sure in the coming weeks we'll see where that takes me.
Well, until I had to shut it off, I had a Bakemonogatari loading in my torrents. So
I have heard that the Monogatari series is incredible from numerous sources.
It is just an amazing collection of just really, really weird people.
Yeah, I sat down and tried to start it one day, and I forget what... I think I just had a lot going on outside of what I was doing. And that distracted me enough that the series itself just confused me into not really being able to get into it. But I acknowledge that, and I'll be ready to give it another shot eventually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's kind of a shame that you don't really read too much, Pat, because you know, I think the Stormlight books would probably have a lot that you would enjoy. It's very, very anime inspired. Brandon knows this, obviously.
It's something I could take a look at. It, especially in audiobook form, might be ideal for me.
Yeah,
just because I'm always doing something, you know?
Yeah, you know, there's anime elements in there, there's elements of tokusatsu in there. You know, Brandon is a big fan of Asian culture, so it kind of shows in that that series in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could give it a look. It's more an issue of... I still think of books as books. Like, when you pick it up, it's one of those things that kind of commands your undivided attention. It's why I won't answer my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I have to, whatever I'm doing, I have to be able to be doing something else.
Yeah.
Or I go completely insane. And, yeah, maybe audiobooks would be a good solution for that.
Mm-hmm.
To allow me to,
multitask.
To pacify my ADD.
Yeah.
While I'm reading, or should I say, listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how I approach books myself. Because I usually end up reading two or three of them at a time.
Yeah,
while watching television.
Yep.
Like, or have
when
something
I put
going
it in
on
that scope, I have no idea how the hell I became a writer. It's so counterintuitive. How my brain works, but I do it.
Hey, it works.
All right. Well, what about you, Teresa?
I've actually been bucking the trend and playing a shit ton of Pokemon Go. So much that I've walked so much that I screwed up my ankle and I don't really know what I did. I mean, I was just walking. Just walking. I didn't do anything weird. But I visited a Charmander nest this week and did not see a Charizard pop, did not catch enough Charmander to evolve, but, you know, I'm going to get there. And I saw a Vulpix and the little bastard ran away. I threw a ball. It was miserable. And it was a really high power Vulpix. It's probably a little above my pay grade. And I didn't get a second shot at trying to catch him. And then today I was driving somewhere. And yes, I know I shouldn't look at my phone while I drive, but I did. And there was a Ninetales silhouette. And I pulled off and tried to find that bastard. So I have been going through Pokeballs and all sorts of stuff like mad. I've been taking over gyms. And really, I'm not very far. I'm just probably about 20 Pokemon from leveling up to catching 20 to leveling up to level 19. And then hopefully I can do a little bit better. But I've been powering up some of my Pokemon. I got this one Tauros, which is it's one of the regional ones. It's obviously for the U.S. And his second attack is an Earth attack. I think it's Earthquake, and it has a 100 power, which is awesome. But he was only like a 195 CP Pokemon. So I've been catching everything I run across to get Stardust so I can level him up. And I'm getting there, but holy crap, it's taken forever.
What level are you?
Almost 19. Like, just
so you're
there.
Way ahead of me.
Yeah, but I'm way behind everybody else. I was chatting up the cart dude at Target today for kind of a bad amount of time. I was really keeping him from his work, but he didn't give a shit. And he said that a Venusaur had popped there at Target. I know. And he wasn't working that day. So he missed it. But we were talking, and he's like fucking level 25. I'm like, what?
So he can get good stuff.
Shit. Yes. And he said that if I went down to Navy Pier, he said that it's a huge Squirtle nest. So maybe we'll take the train downtown or something and go do that, because I don't want to pay 25 freaking bucks for parking in Navy Pier. Great to live near a big city. Costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But I did carve out some time and play I Am Setsuna. And I'm also getting there, too. And somebody's a little jealous of it. He wants to play. So Scott really likes the look of it, and he really likes the soundtrack, too. So he'll get his chance.
Well, those have multiple saves.
They do. They do. Yeah.
Then what's the issue?
I won't give up the TV. Well, it's the damn truth.
Steve streams to other devices.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not while she's using it.
Exactly. Which is unusual because I've not had a lot of crap to do this week. I haven't logged on to Final Fantasy 14 since Sunday. What's wrong with me? I played like 100 hours last week. Well, maybe not quite that much, but I definitely...
If you want to jump on after the show, maybe I'll join you.
I've been up since 4 a.m. What time are you getting off work tomorrow?
Well, I'm off today.
Oh, okay.
So I don't go into work. I won't be coming home from work in the morning, so... I probably shouldn't have to go to bed until around 4 p.m. tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I will make somebody else take the kid to archery class, because I'm not going there. And we can play, because I really need to. I'm close to 50. I'm getting there. I've been working on the main storyline, and I think that's what's happened.
You're going to get epic story arc after epic story arc after epic story arc.
You know? But I played so much last week that I had to put it down. So, you guys know how that goes.
Yeah.
Feast and famine. But other than that, we have been watching a little bit of Star Trek Voyager. We are still getting through. Still getting through in Stardate order. Thank goodness we laid off a Deep Space Nine for a little bit because, oh my god. But the last Voyager was kind of crazy. And then I decided to marathon Upstairs, Downstairs, the newer version of it. And I'm in the middle of an episode, and if they lose my place, I will go out there and kill them. It is incredible. If you're into British dramas, jeez, you gotta watch it. It's nuts. The first season was only 3 episodes, and the first 2 episodes were a complete and total emotional roller coaster. It's like, what? Downton Abbey, they ain't got shit on this show. Upstairs, downstairs. Did I? Wow. I'm really enjoying it, and obviously I'm killing time until the next Doctor Who, and I've got until Christmas to kill. Got a lot of old Doctor Who that we can watch, though, but that's not something that I get to watch on my own time because everybody wants to watch it, so.
There's always Mr. Robot and Stranger Things.
Yes. Yes. All these things that are on my list. Well, Stranger Things, no, that's another one. I'll catch a little aggro if I watch it solo. So, yeah, gotta wait for him to be available for that one. Yeah. And it's killing me because so many people on my Facebook friends list are watching it, and they're like, you can't leave us like this. What are you doing? What is it? I want to know. But other than that, I've been a little all consumed with my self-created phone drama. You guys have known me long enough to know that I will swing over to Android for a couple weeks, get pissy, and go back to Apple.
Okay. And I never understood that.
Well, let me tell you why I'm going back. You wish I wouldn't. It's Pokemon Go. I got a Nexus 5X. Nice phone. Not enough RAM to keep me going. And I wondered if that was going to be the case going in, because I really load the hell out of my phone. It has to do a lot for me. And one of the things that I wanted out of Android was an all-time, like, on all the time across all the apps it possibly can, blocking every single ad. And so I found that with NetGuard. And even when I take off almost every other app other than the essentials, I'm still, you know, I'm still using 1.6 out of 2 gigs. Well, it's 1.8 of available memory. So my RAM usage is unbelievably high. And yes, I already got the update to Nougat. I was on the beta, and then I got pushed out to the regular one. I've gone into developer settings. I've screwed with everything. And I just can't keep it from stuttering. And I did take off NetGuard, completely uninstalled it to see if that would help me out. And I still had the same issues where I don't understand why I am eating up so much of the available RAM other than it only has 2 megs of RAM. So
2 gigs of RAM on a phone is... that should be plenty, really.
It should be, but
yeah, what's your like default suite of apps?
I have
you probably have quite a few.
Pokemon Go, obviously. I play Dice with Buddies, and as far as games go, those are the only ones that I play every day. And then my kid has a bunch of stuff on here, Neko Atsumi, which I already played, and I already got all the damn cats, so I was done with that. He's got this indie game called Life Run that I found out about on Reddit, and he really likes it. I'm not much for it. It's kind of like a Flappy Bird type of twitchy game. Mm. You know, he's got Goat Simulator on here and Terraria and Minecraft. So you see some of the problems, but see, those things aren't even running in the background because I just don't have them going. But I have a weather app. I have a fitness app. I know. That one's doing the tracking. And I've got Google Fit going, so it's measuring all of my steps on my road to killing my ankle playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah. What I would probably recommend you do is for that is, since you've got Nougat, go into settings and data saver and like set data saver on pretty much every app except for the essentials. And then they will stop basically like using any data. But also, since it's not using any data, it's also not going to be using any memory.
It's true, but I always want it checking my steps because it's something that I try to pay attention to. And
it'll,
I also,
it'll still check them. It's just when you get to Wi-Fi, that's when it'll upload them.
But how is it going to track my progress without using GPS?
Yeah, it still uses GPS. I mean, you're gonna your phone is going to be it's still going to be functional as far as
GPS is not data.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I thought GPS is not GPS. Data.
No. Okay. GPS will use data if you're having to download maps.
Okay.
But as far as that goes, it's like it's basically just coordinates.
Okay.
And then you know the apps will just plot that in afterwards.
Okay, that's because I did shit through the first month of Pokemon Go is really bad.
Plus Nougat has cat mode, so
yeah.
I should fool around with that. Let me stick that in the browser.
That is probably one of the most involved Easter eggs that Android has ever had.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I want to play it.
It's like, oh, yep, so much for the iPhone.
I use a lot of apps. I use a couple of different messaging systems. And then, you know, I've got the shit that I spend my time on. I spend my time on Reddit and Imgur.
Yeah.
And then some photo apps and shit. But I really enjoy not having ads, especially in Dice with Buddies. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But and then other than that, I've been eating birthday cake.
Mm-hmm.
It's nobody's birthday, but Target makes delicious cakes. And when I was at Target picking up toothpaste, because this is what I do with my freaking day, run errands and, you know, be a little good housewife shit. I'm having issues with that. Can you tell? I'm ready to go back to work. Kind of bored. But anyway, I was picking up toothpaste and I saw that they had like 20 gallons of Allen buttercream frosting. I used to work at J.W. Allen, and I worked in their promotions department right next to their test bakery, and I got to smell and be absolutely driven crazy by all the wonderful things that they did there, and I think that's why I like Target cake so much, because I often got to take home the little delicacies that they made when they were training or testing new recipes. So, yummy, yummy, yummy. Lots of cake.
Yeah.
That's about it for me, and that was really quite a lot. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, well, what about you, Chris?
So, I got... I've been reading more Game of Thrones and finally finished the first book.
Hooray!
Yeah. Good luck, because they only get longer from here.
Yeah, I started the second, and just the prologue was like, 41 minutes till the end of the chapter. I was like, fuck. along with that, I rewatched the first season, and I see a few issues of things I wish they didn't have to, like, rush through. Like, the first battle, or the first two battles between the Lannisters and Starks, they kind of run them both together, so it kind of seems like, when I first watched it, looked like one thing. I was like, how the hell did they get Jaime out of this fight with Tywin and Tyrion? It's like, that confused me, but reading the book, it makes way more sense that it's two separate things.
Yeah.
They kind of just ran together, so it kind of makes me wish they had like a 12, 13 episode season instead of 10.
Yeah.
Because they seem like the first couple episodes and like the last episode or two were kind of done right, and the rest kind of just sped through everything as fast as they could.
Yeah, that's pretty much the pattern for the entire show so far.
Yep. Yeah, there's like the whole time that Ned is in the dungeon in the dark.
Hmm.
He's fighting with madness, and you don't get any of that from the show.
No.
Nope.
It's just like Ferris hint, like, hey, what's up? I got something to talk to you about. It's like, okay. And yeah, so far, like, the prologue in the second book is not in the show, as far as I can tell. It's all introducing Stannis, who's kind of this weird figure in the first book where it's like, oh, there's Stannis down in Dragonstone. Well, you never told me anything about him.
He'll show up in the show eventually.
Yeah, I've seen him. Like, the weird, crazy cult thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is all this? So there's interesting stuff going on, so I'm looking forward to watching more of that. And reading to see what the hell actually goes on. Well, I do really like the way that Daenerys ends the last season. Where she's like, fuck all of this shit. Get these dragons born.
Mm.
Become the dragon master. Looking forward to continuing all that. I'm still playing Alien Nation. They just released another big update a few days ago that added weekly missions. Well, it's just one mission per week. But so I came into that level 25. All the enemies are like 42. So I was like dying constantly, which was perfectly fine. I mean, I was racking up tons of experience.
Hmm.
So I went from 25 to 29 during the course of beating that, which is huge. I got like 60-something million XP.
Hmm.
That was probably more than I got in the entire time previous to that.
Yeah.
Up to that point, that's repeatable. One of the things they added is armor sets that have like specific like modifiers to them. So it'll be like stuff like more health pickups, but less ability pickups, or different stuff like that. They also have different looks to them. From what I can tell, if you beat the weekly mission, you unlock some of the customizable colors. So then you can just change colors to what you want.
Hmm.
And along with that, I'm still trying to get through the next rank. I'm in gold. And this is the tough part where it's, I either have to get to like the top two or three to go up to platinum. Or if I'm in the bottom three, I go back down to silver. Hmm. So I am trying to figure out how to get back into the middle, because somehow people are able to rack up like a billion plus XP in the course of a week. I haven't figured it out. I tried to Google it, and that's not an easy thing to do.
Mm.
So once you start saying League XP starts bringing up League of Legends things, and it's like, no, that's not what I want. There's nobody else in the air. It's not wondering how the hell to get a bunch of XP in this game. So at this point, I'm probably going to try and run that weekly mission a couple more times just to get back into the middle of the pack for this week ends, and then try again next week. They also put out some more season pass stuff for that game where there are two new weapons. One is a heavy weapon, which is where like the flamethrower and minigun and rocket launcher are at. This one, it's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of like shooting out these big energy orbs out that just do damage to whatever's in its path. It's kind of hard to control, but it might just be that I need to get like a good drop for that. Because I think I just had like a white or a green.
Hmm.
Where you can't do any sort of like orbs, like the ability orbs that are attached to that stuff, or so like gems in Diablo, that sort of stuff. The other one is sort of a laser gun. Shoots out like two lasers. It is really good for kind of sweeping around into crowds, which that game loves to throw crowds of enemies at you. So That's a good way to sort. Just whittle down people real quick. And as a secondary weapon, where like the pistol and plasma shotgun, stuff like that is, that are not the primary stuff. So I at least like that laser gun. That's pretty cool. And I've gotten an upgraded version of that, so I'm starting to like wreck fools right now. And, I definitely want to get some more time with that to stick around in Gold League for another week, so I can try and figure out how to get up to Platinum. See what the hell's going on up there. Still playing more of No Man's Sky. I finally got back on the Atlas path. Got my first blueprint for the Atlas Pass version 1, which lets me actually get into other parts of the, like, space stations and stuff like that. And I landed on a planet that has these things called vortex cubes, which are like special little items you collect, and they're worth a good bit of money. But the problem is, on this planet, there are sentinels, and every time I pick one up, it gets me to level 3 awareness, or like 3 stars in GTA.
Just by picking one up.
But the easy way to get out of it is to go in a cave or go inside a building. They can't figure out how to go inside those things. So they can sort of throw off their AI. They just lose you real quick. So I'm trying to find a good spot to start selling these things, because each one of them takes up one spot in my inventory.
Yeah.
Which means they start filling up real quick. And I also have to keep some other stuff so I can keep my ship fueled and my shields and that filled up. So I need to just explore this planet a little bit more. But yeah, I'm in a pretty good place. I'm still having problems with my galactic map, where I still have these weird 2 planets that are on my custom GPS thing, so I can't get rid of them. There's no way to like delete them, as far as I can tell. So one of these categories on the galactic map is supposed to show me the Atlas Pass, the Atlas Path through the galaxy that I want to pursue, but I can't find it. It's like one of these other planets' GPS things is taking up my spot, so I gotta figure that out. Another stuff I'm playing is a Loco Cycle on the Xbox One.
Is this the one with the sentient motorcycle?
Yes. The one that's very much trauma-inspired, that story. So this is one I bought around the time I got the system around launch, like December or so. I've just been coming back to it every once in a while. Probably in a good spot to just kind of burn through the rest of it. So I have Iris all leveled up. So she does like a spread shot, launches missiles, other crazy shit like that. I think I have like probably 2 more boss battles at this point. And sort of the one knock against that game is just kind of tedious. It's just kind of, you're driving on the highway and you're shooting at enemies. They're driving by, or occasionally there'll be like a combat sequence. Yeah, you actually go into like Batman Arkham style combat sequences with the motorcycle. And also you throw, the other part of that is that you have a Mexican car mechanic stuck to the back wheel. His pants get caught there. So he goes on this cross-country trip to some sort of motorcycle festival. Along the way, there's another sentient motorcycle going after her called Spike, which is voiced by Robert Patrick. Because they know how to do it over there. That game's real fun and really cheesy way. He decides to get his own person stuck to him, to his back wheel, which is sort of a big lady who's like wearing shorts, so there's no actual reason how she's stuck to him.
Yeah, it's twisted pixely. Don't overthink it.
And so I got to a nice little cutscene where Spike and his companion stop off at a diner, roadside diner. And, like, he's going to get to do some sort of, like, food-eating challenge somehow. So you got all these people, like, putting the bib around his, his lights. Like, putting the burger and the food he's supposed to eat. Like, cheering him on. Go, Spike, go. It's like, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, that's pretty fun. Looking forward to playing more of that. And, yeah, I found out they still do challenges, the achievement challenges stuff.
Hmm.
They don't surface it anywhere on the console. I had to go to, like, True Achievements. They managed to catalog that stuff.
Yeah.
They somehow scraped servers just the right way to find that stuff. I'm trying to see if I can find all the current ones. Yeah, here it is, like, just weird stuff. Like, NHL 17 has a couple on there. Madden had one to play a game before the EA Access play trial ended.
Hmm.
Stuff like that. Oh, they have ones. Win and complete 25 online matches by October 1st. NHL 17. Like, that's a lot of... yeah, just weird stuff. But there's one that was for Local Cycle. That's called I Promise. And it's just you pause the game and there's an option on there that says Promise. And it's just a real dumb little thing.
This game. Yeah, it's like probably it's kind of like the achievement for remapping the controls in Explosion Man, even though there's only one control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like you click on it and it's like, do you promise? It's like, yes. And it just says like, I promise. Goes up to this little cloud, and that's it.
Achievement unlocked.
But I'm on the top of my leaderboards for my friend leaderboards for most promises. So, like, I've done it like 18 times or something like that. Mm. Yeah, this is pretty easy to do. So yeah, that's been mainly it for this past week. Mm. And yeah, I think we can move on.
Cool. Yeah. All right, my turn. First and foremost, still playing Tales of Exilia. Yes, that is how it's pronounced, I found out. It's good, you know, it's kind of a jump back from where Zestiria was because the battle system is a little different. It's more of the old school type of Tales battle system where, you know, instead of like in Zestiria where it was more third dimensional and, you know, it was just in general, it was more sort of Kingdom Hearts-esque.
Yeah.
The one for this one is more, it's 3D, but it fights like it's on a 2D plane.
Okay.
So, you know, that's, you know, you can... It depends, you know, that's sort of a take it or leave it type thing.
Yeah.
Doesn't really bother me that much, but, you know, it might bother Pat.
Well, I've not played enough different installments of the Tales series to really pick up differences
it's
between battle
systems. It's still kind of similar to Vesperia.
Okay.
And I'll be talking a little bit about the Tales series a little later. Let's see. I'm also working on some writing projects. I've got a short piece that I'm just about finished with that I'm thinking of sending off to a couple of different publications, seeing if they have any interest or not.
Yeah.
Some places like Clark's World, Asimov's, place like that. Let's see. Also, well, I'm still reading. I'm reading the first volume of Bakano by Ryo Narita.
Nice.
Ryogo Narita, sorry. And yeah, it's the book series that the anime is based on. And as I pointed out before, Narita is also the author of Do Ra 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 and some other stuffs. One of the neat things about both Bakano and Do Ra 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 is they're actually related. They take place in the same universe. You know, it's the thing about Bakano specifically is it nominally is about a group of characters going through their individual storylines in the Prohibition era, but there's just all this weird shit that shows up. You know, like, there's a group of alchemists who somehow managed to create the secret of immortality, and it ends up starting a mafia turf war. And there's this train, that this locomotive that a bunch of these mafia families and a bunch of these characters are sort of gravitating towards, called the Flying Pussyfoot. And apparently there's this one dude on there named the Rail Tracer who's like a serial killer. It's just weird shit.
Yeah.
And of course I got that. I'm still reading Overlord. I'm also reading Kizu Monogatari Wound Tale by Nisio Eason. That's the prequel to the Baki Monogatari series.
Hmm.
And in fact, I checked Amazon, and Vertical is going to be publishing the first volume of Baki Monogatari proper in December.
Oh, nice.
December 20th. So, you know, mark your calendars, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not much from there. I've been watching Game Grumps. They're starting to do a playthrough of Deadly Premonition, and that's going to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Uh-huh.
Have any of you other guys ever played that?
Yes.
Can't Deadly say I Premonition?
Have. Yes. That is an experience.
And not in a good sense.
Yeah, it just...
It's yeah.
It's probably the single most divisive game of last generation, I think. It's just weird. I mean, it's like Twin Peaks, but it's got like all these weird sort of Japanese quirks to it.
Yeah.
And Japanese Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and it's... There's just all, you know, and like Twin Peaks, it's got all these weird characters in it, including a male cop who runs like a girl.
Yep.
And this old lady whose theme song sounds almost like a dead ringer for the main theme of Super Mario World. You know. You know that. It's weird.
It has a number of locations that are almost exact copies of places in Twin Peaks.
In fact, apparently before the game actually came out, they had to do a lot of changes to it because apparently the game in its original form was so similar to Twin Peaks that the people who hold the rights to Twin Peaks actually sent them a cease and desist order.
That makes sense.
Yeah, can't say I'm not surprised.
Pretty sure, like David.
The bar is in there.
Yeah, the what they call the red room is in there too, even though it's kind of different from what it is in the show, but whatever. So yeah, that's what I've been doing. Has anybody got anything else they want to add?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I haven't seen all of Deadly Premonition. Watching Twin Peaks after that, just the pilot alone was like, "Holy crap! Everything here is in Deadly Premonition."
Yeah. By the way, just for anybody who's wondering, if you ever get a chance, go out and get the Twin Peaks DVD collection because it's a pretty awesome show, way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was doing, you know, Lost and Breaking Bad before, you know, decades ahead before those shows existed.
Yeah. Mm. And then they brought it back.
And then they brought it back, yeah. Oh, they also made a movie, too.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks Firewalk with me. Mm. By the way,
this show coming up, too.
Mm-hmm. Is it a new cast?
It's mostly the same cast, plus two people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of the crazy thing about it. It's like 20, 25 years later, and they've got most everybody they could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also like... Well, that's David Lynch for you. Yeah. So, but all right then. So I guess it is once again time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. Now, some of you guys probably know I'm a bit of a food guy. I love food.
I think we all basically love food.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm you know, that's sort of like me saying I like food. But I mean, like...
That was you saying you like food.
I mean, you know, I like food not just as something to eat, but also as a subject.
Mm.
You know, something to look into. You know, what they call a foodie, even though that sounds a little too pretentious.
Mm.
But here's the other thing. Not only do I like food that way... I also love the really, really shitty food. Like the really bad for you.
Mm.
You mean like fried macaroni and cheese?
Fried macaroni and cheese, fucking Luther burgers.
Yes. I'll find the clip.
pretty much the entirety of the McDonald's custom menu that we talked about last week.
Yeah. Well, does anyone here not know what a Luther burger is?
Yep, I don't know.
Okay, yeah, imagine a...
I've seen Boondocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh my god, okay.
That's it. It's a bacon double cheeseburger with two halves of a Krispy Kreme glazed donut instead of a bun.
No, two Krispy Kreme donuts.
Oh. Well, I've heard it as having it also...
That's the diet version.
But it is exactly what it yes, and I have had those a couple of times and they are amazing.
God damn you, I want
Yeah, there's a great episode of the Boondocks called The Itis.
It's
all that.
Not just that, but like soul food in general. Which
yeah, it's all about starting up this like soul food restaurant where
this
you also rent
feels like.
Rent a bed with it so you can take a nap after this crappy.
Yeah. Yeah, but probably, like, when it comes to the United States especially, pretty much all of these really, you know, bad-for-you foods usually come from two places. They either come from my home state of Georgia, which is where the Luther burger is from, or it comes from Texas.
Or just the South in general, I think we
could
say.
Yeah, but usually it's those two particular.
But you know what? It's so polarized on the food that comes from the South. On one hand, you have good shit, wonderful soul food, and then you have fucking grits.
Hey, now don't you knock grits, Yankee.
I will knock grits. I hate them.
Whoa.
They're awful.
You know what? I never thought I was going to say this again, but you know what? I think we're going to rise again.
Wow.
Just because you badmouth grits, now all you northern Yankees have to die.
All the cornfields to get here.
It's all your fault. I hope you're happy. But anyway, getting back to what I was talking about. So like one of the things they have in Texas that they invented, kind of, sort of, but not really. So like everybody knows what fried chicken is, right?
Of course.
Okay, well. In Texas, they came up with something called chicken fried steak, which is steak that you fry up like it was chicken. And then, of course, they followed that up with chicken fried chicken, which is where...
It's good shit.
Yeah, which is where you take a chicken cutlet and fry it up like you would a chicken fried steak, which in turn is cooked as if you were frying up chicken. It's fry-ception.
Leads to frying everything.
Yeah. But, There's this one place in Texas, this one little place in, hold on, I need to bring this back up because it's a little place called Solodex Original Country Inn. It's in Snook, Texas, which is, that's the name of the town. And about a decade or so ago, he came up with the ultimate of all of these. Like, the one, the ultimate.
I can't wait to hear about this.
The thing that puts all of those to shame. And I mean every last one of them. My friends, I give you, courtesy of Brandon's Random Factoid, chicken fried bacon.
Holy shit, I want it. Oh my god. Okay, like I said, so polarizing.
Chicken fried bacon consists of streaky strips of bacon. And when I remember, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about like American type bacon.
Yeah.
That's for Phil's benefit. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Don't knock the back bacon, eh?
Oh, I'm not knocking the back bacon. The back bacon's lovely. I'm just...
Yeah, we just call it ham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do not.
But it is streaky strips of bacon dredged up in chicken fried steak batter and deep fried and served with a nice bowl of country cream gravy on the side for dipping.
Oh. I need this in my life.
So they've turned bacon into a meal.
Basically.
So
if bacon wasn't already a meal, you weren't using enough of it.
So basically, Sodalak came up with this, and it basically just became a massive sort of thing. I mean, Texas comedian John Kelso did a piece about it in his show Texas Curiosities. He basically stated things are not only bigger in Texas, they're greasier. And it's hard to imagine a more artery clogging food.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally fat, fried in fat, and served with fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is,
whoever has to come up with a nutrition fact sheet for this,
facts, none.
Some of the people who work for the Center for Science in the Public Interest, which is one of the most notorious health nanny groups out there. Yeah. Although, for the record, they do have a lot of things we have to thank them for. They're the reasons we get nutrition facts on our food and, you know, why there's actually a federal standard. Because before then, if they even bothered to show you the nutritional stuff, they could completely pull it out of their ass.
Yeah.
Basically, Sodalak, you know, he came up with this, and then in 2008, it was entered into the best taste contest at the Texas State Fair, which, for those of you who know anything, the State Fair in Texas in Dallas is particularly famous for debuting these types of really ultra shitty type food every year.
Mm.
So they place stuff that's come from that place is stuff like fried Coke, fried bubble gum, fried shark, fried pickles, stuff like that.
How do you even fry Coke?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Basically, you egg it up so that it's a nice, thick, kind of custardy mixture, and then you fry it up in a nice sort of a doughy ball, and then cover it in the syrup, the flavoring syrup that Coca-Cola uses.
And then you immediately have a colostomy bag.
Oh, by the way, I forgot what was their big hit at the State Fair of Texas last year.
Hmm.
Fried butter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Not lying, just that's a ball of butter deep fried. That's
batter
it.
Batter it up. And...
Okay.
Yeah.
This is why Hostess now offers the fried Twinkie as a thing that they sell.
That's something else that they came up with down there too.
That was a while ago, though.
Yeah, that was kind of what made it famous. But yeah, so Sodalak passed away a few years ago, and before you say no, it wasn't because of his heart; it was from natural causes. He was an old man, because I knew that was coming. So you know,
you gotta defuse the obvious joke, though.
Yeah. So his family runs the place now, and they still serve it. You can get it for $6. And people will eat it. They'll eat it as their breakfast. Some will eat it as a side or an appetizer. Some will just have it for by itself for the meal as an entree. Just
chicken fried bacon. Oh, my God.
And the home of the free. Hey, sorry, I got that screwed up. And that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. This episode of Brandon's Random Factoid has been sponsored by Bayer. Bayer! It may not help you with the cholesterol, but it might save you from the heart attack.
Oh my God.
And now you know what you're going to be dreaming about tonight.
This show is going to be called Chicken Fried Bacon.
Yep. Yes. It is officially chicken fried bacon. All right, so as always, we now have to go to our asshole of the week. And once again, although we thought it was going to be Donald Trump who was going to be able to do it, no, somebody actually topped him.
And I haven't actually heard about this one, so yeah.
Okay, so everybody knows what the Czech Republic is, right?
Yeah.
It's where Prague is. Uh-huh. All right. So
hockey players from there. Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's actually pretty neat little country. Used to be part of a country called Czechoslovakia until they split up, and now there's just Czech Republic and Slovakia.
Yeah.
Two different countries. So in the Czech Republic, there is this organization. I'm trying to find out if this group actually has a name. But it's led by this particular asshole named Martin Konvika, who is an anti-immigration activist. And those of you know, there's been that Syrian refugee crisis. And because of that, there's been this and people forget, it's although primarily, most of these refugees are from Syria. The specific conflict in Syria has spilled over into just about every other country in the Middle East. So there's also immigrants from other refugees from other countries who are making their way towards Europe, and Eastern Europe in particular. And so recently there's been this influx of primarily Muslim immigrants coming in from Syria. And if you've known anything, if you've paid attention to the news lately, well, there's certain segments of these countries who aren't too happy about that. So Martin Konvika and his little organization decided, we need to bring attention to our cause of hatred and bigotry. And so what did they do? They dressed up, rented a camel and a jeep, and some realistic-looking BB guns, and they faked an ISIS attack in the middle of Prague.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah, that's what I said. What the actual fuck? So we've got it linked in the show notes, and you'll see, you know, the pictures we've got here. Because people photographed this thing. And so, yeah, it's basically a bunch of pasty Eastern Europeans dressed up in fake beards and camo. I got a fake ISIS flag. And they're, they got down and bowed towards Mecca. And the dude had like this, Mark Gunvika himself had like this really bad, like pasted on, like soul patch on his chin. Yeah. Looked like a giant sperm. But what's even worse, and it gets just worse, because one of the people in this organization basically faked, you know, sort of quote-unquote played the part of a pro-refugee individual, and she's holding a sign that says refugees welcome. She's wearing a red beret and short pants and everything, and then they fake kidnap and assault her. And yeah, it's awful.
God.
Yeah, and so what eventually happened, and the thing is, like, no one knew if this was serious or not. I mean, there was an owner of a Jewish deli down the street who heard it, and, like, he told the media that he actually got his gun and was headed down towards to the town square, and this is just, it's unbelievable bullshit. I mean, this idiot really thought this was okay. I mean,
wow.
Just no tact whatsoever.
No tact, and this is...
Or human decency, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that definitely qualifies as the asshole of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're probably surprised by the kind of attention it's actually getting them.
This is one of those things where it's like, even ISIS is going to look at and go... Dude,
you guys are dumbasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, if you really think about it, if this was any other country, the headlines in the newspapers would be idiot ISIS pranksters lynched by local population.
Yeah.
Which is what should have happened.
Did you mention they had permission from City Hall to do this?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's been suggested that they didn't actually tell the people at City Hall everything that they were intending to do.
Yeah, you just planned a demonstration.
Yeah, and City Hall is none too happy with them.
Hope not.
Amongst other people.
Same as the police.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, goddamn.
Pretty sure this is going to be an ongoing story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, if you didn't mention the country this was happening in, Chris said it was here.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would have believed it.
So I believe in Texas there was somebody like a year or so ago that was staging a shooting in Texas University.
Yeah.
To try to make some sort of point.
Yeah. But so to clean that bit of ugliness out of our mouths, a little bit of good news from the NHL. The Arizona Coyotes has hired their first full-time female coach.
Yeah, so this is the first time a female has gotten a full-time coaching role in NHL history.
I know that there's been a couple of, like, part-time coaches in the past.
Yeah,
yeah, it's usually
like,
been
in
the
late
off-season.
70s.
Yeah, like, in the ones that have been doing it lately have been in the off-season where that kind of doesn't really count.
Yeah,
just bring
but this
in somebody
is...
to do this. But she's the skating coach for the Arizona team, and yeah, this is cool to see women starting to break through these men's sports.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And at least the good thing is, at least since this is the NHL, she doesn't have as much of a hill to climb. Since, you know, female coaches are not as uncommon as, say, NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills have a woman that works on their team.
Mm-hmm. So,
the Spurs and the NBA, I have one that works on the bench. So, starting to get through.
Yeah.
I'm hoping one day that we'll be able to get to the point where we won't have to segregate our sport by gender. Just, you know, that just have, you know, the standard, and depending on what your gender is, if you meet it, you're in the team.
Yeah.
You don't have to lower the standard or anything. Just keep them like they are, and just that's all. That's all you got to do. It would be nice, but it ain't happening for a good long while.
Yep.
But that's good.
Yeah, progress.
Yeah. So, in other news, Paul LePage. He is the governor of Maine.
Yep.
State of Maine, which also just so happens to be the setting of most of Stephen King's novels.
Not that that has anything to do with it.
Oh, if it does, I like where it's going.
So, Paul LePage is kind of an asshole. He is a 100% wing nut. And,
story exploits all of that.
Oh, yeah. So, one of the state representatives, the Democratic state representatives in Maine is Drew Gatineau. Did I pronounce that right, or is it Gatine?
Probably Gatine.
All right, we'll just say Drew Gatine. Drew Gatine basically accused Paul LePage of being racist after the governor said he kept a binder full of drug traffickers arrested in Maine and that more than 90% of them were black or Hispanic. Now, he said, now for the record, Gatine himself denies that he actually made the claim. But that didn't really stop Paul LePage for leaving a rather nasty, threatening voicemail where he said, and I'm quoting here, "Mr. Gatine, this is Governor Paul Richard LePage. I would like to talk to you about your comments about my being a racist, you cocksucker. I want to talk to you. I want you to prove that I'm a racist. I've spent my life helping black people, and you little son of a bitch, socialist cocksucker. You, I need you to just freaking, I want you to record this and make it become public because I am after you. Thank you."
Jesus.
I love the ads. I want you to record this and make it public.
And a thank you.
Thank you.
And that's when Charlie Sheen shows up to tell him to chill out a bit.
Yeah.
Wow.
So just to sort of back up some more facts here, in January, LePage said men with names like D-Money, Smoothie, and Shifty were dealing drugs in Maine and impregnating white women. Earlier this week, he said the binder he kept, the one where he talked about the drug peddlers and their race, he kept proved he isn't racist because it supported his statements about the racial makeup of the traffickers. Dude, that's kind of not the point.
This binder proves I'm not racist.
Yeah. LePage released a statement Friday saying he was angry and apologized for his language, and I quote, "When someone calls me a racist, I take it very seriously. I didn't know Drew Gatine from a hole in the wall until yesterday. It made me enormously angry when a TV reporter asked me for my reaction about Gatine calling me a racist. It is the absolute worst, most vile thing you could call a person. So I called Gatine and used the worst word I could think of. I apologize for that to the people of Maine, but I make no apology for trying to end the drug epidemic that is ravaging our state." By the way, where this was linked to from Huffington Post, it says here, Gatine did not respond to HuffPost's request for comment on the incident, but he told the Press Herald that LePage's voicemail was inappropriate and uncalled for. No kidding.
I believe there was one point where he wished he was in the 1820s so he could call him to a duel.
Yeah, it says here, and I'm quoting, "When a snot-nosed little guy from Westbrook calls me a racist, now I'd like him to come up here because, tell you right now, I wish it were 1825 and we would have a duel. That's how angry I am. I would not put my gun in the air. I guarantee you I would not be Alexander Hamilton. I would point it right between his eyes because he is a snot-nosed little runt. He has not done a damn thing since he's been in this legislature to help move the state forward."
And he's backpedaling that, said he didn't actually mean any physical harm to Gatine.
Yeah.
After all that.
Yeah.
He says he claims he was just a little upset.
You know, it's like, have you guys, like, watched House of Cards? Any of you?
Some.
Yeah.
And I know where you're going with this.
It's like, so some people think that the stuff that is depicted in House of Cards is an exaggeration.
Nope.
No, it's not.
I believe when there were states suing the federal government over the transgender stuff,
mm-hmm.
Paul LePage himself was one of the people in that lawsuit. Not Maine,
Yeah. Oh, him just the governor. Specifically.
Mm.
Just to give you an idea of what sort of person we're dealing with here.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
A raging asshole. Yeah, but, okay, so, moving on from that, the Olympics closed recently. Yeah.
I noticed a distinct lack of spam on my phone from my news apps, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, there was some things that happened to that, specifically the thing where they were basically passing the torch to Tokyo, and Shinzo Abe himself, the Prime Minister, came out of a pipe with a Mario hat.
That was kind of cool.
It was.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I would say, you know, because Japan, but yeah, that is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Abe himself is a real piece of shit.
Yeah. Oh, well.
But here's the problem. Apparently, ratings-wise, the Olympics didn't really do all that well.
Shocking.
Yeah. And NBC basically turned it around and said, well, it's those damn millennials. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, let me just say here that what NBC tried to do this year as far as their, you know, Olympic coverage is concerned, it was kind of sort of halfway towards the right direction. Because they did have a pretty decent app where you could get most of the events. They had like the gold zone where you could just basically just tune that in and they would, you know, switch you every half hour or so from one event to another. And you know, keep you watching stuff that way.
Yeah.
But fortunately, that required a cable login.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the problem, NBC.
Yeah. See, this is another example.
Watching, you got to make it easier.
Yeah, this is another example of those, of all those, you know, crusty pricks who run old media still living in their bubble and not quite getting it yet.
Yeah, it's the last statistics that have come out, it's basically last month, have basically come to the conclusion that cord cutting, yeah, it's a thing. You guys better take it seriously.
It's
beyond
a thing.
Yeah.
Completely beyond.
So, yeah, NBC blaming millennials is just one of those things that it's a dying industry going kicking and screaming into the 21st century, whether they want to or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, their CEO here, quote, mentions Facebook and Snapchat, so he's at least aware there's stuff on the internet where people can watch
their
sort of
kids
stuff.
And their internet.
Yep.
Like, they should be at least making that stuff, like putting up on Twitch, YouTube, or maybe just sell like a $20-$30 pass to watch all of the Olympic stuff. Yeah. Really.
Let's be honest though, as far as like ratings for the Olympics go, they've been kind of going downhill for a good decade now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last great rating success as far as the Olympics go was the ones in Beijing. Mm. And that was it.
Yeah, it doesn't help when they try to push things to other channels.
Yeah.
Because they had their sports network where they're... I would see that there's, like, the basketball game, like U.S. versus Australia, one of the biggest games in the whole tournament. That's on NBC Sports Network, not national television.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. It also doesn't help matters when they don't acknowledge that time zones are irrelevant. For the Olympics?
The Rio is 1 hour ahead of our Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
Basically exact same time as anybody here would be watching it.
Yeah.
But I mean, even in the 90s, the Olympics were the ratings. The only reason the ratings would be good, like in the 1990s, the only reason the ratings for the Olympics would be good is because something horrible would happen. Like, you know, that one year that one of the figure skaters hired a person to break the leg of another. Or that one time when the Olympics were in my home state of Georgia and a bomb went off.
Yeah.
So back then, they used to just kind of play all the events all day.
Yeah.
That's not how they were doing it this time.
Yeah. Nope.
It's like some of them are on this other network that you might not have, probably don't have.
Yeah.
And they just decide, oh, we're just going to show these events at prime time, even though they happen hours earlier, and if you're on internet at all, you get spoiled pretty easily.
Yeah.
And deliberately obfuscate some of the foreign participants, like when I forget what, the Hungarian swimmer, the women's swimmer, who just killed one of the records. They kept cutting over to her husband's going nuts in the crowd.
But, yeah, not showing her.
Yeah, it's like lots of sexist stuff being said on the commentary across almost every sort of outlet. Like we saw the infamous Michael Phelps and Black's African-American swimmer win gold. It's like, okay, you guys just don't even try anymore.
Nope.
I could see that one being like, you just put like a temporary title in the CMS, and then the editor just puts it up without letting you change it. That sort of stuff I could see.
You know, if we did that, Dan Rip would fly to our houses and beat us.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Oh, man. But yeah, so once again, new media is slowly strangling old media.
Yeah.
And they haven't gotten the memo yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you see the NFL, when they do the Super Bowl, they actually put that online. Let people actually watch it.
Yeah.
They just put different ads on there.
Yeah. I didn't need a cable login.
Nope.
And they got like a little pie graph here showing the Wednesday night prime time ratings for in millions. NBC Network, 20.7. The Sports Network, 1.17. Online, 0.23. 0.23. That shows you're not... There's a huge chunk of audience if you think that online audience is everybody that would want to watch it.
Yeah.
Should be partnering with Twitter. Get the video up on there. Like the NFL is going to be doing this upcoming season.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Well... Moving on from that, and so I talked before, and you guys who've been listening know, I have been playing a bunch of the Tales games. I played Tales of Zestiria. I've played Tales of Symphonia in the past. I'm playing Tales of Exilia now, which also has a sequel that I will probably be playing after I'm done with this one. And then, of course, Tales of Zestiria has Tales of Berseria, which is coming out, actually, in Japan, coming out in a few but will be coming to here to the U.S. Pretty sure it's going to be early next year. And so, you know, the thing is, the Tales series is kind of deceptive, because when you look at it at first, you know, it's not like ugly. You know, I mean, the character designs are good, and that's partly because Kosuke Fujishima of Ah My Goddess fame has been the primary character designer of the series since its inception. You know, the art direction is good. The music's usually really good. In fact, the original game, Tales of Phantasia, when it came out on the Super Famicom, it was the first Super Famicom game to have a full voice cast. Yes, it actually, a Super Famicom game had a voice.
Yeah,
even a full voice vocal theme song.
Yeah.
And for the record, if you ever look it up, it's kind of an amazing feat of programming. If you ever care to look it up.
Yeah. There's translations for it too if you want to play it in English.
Yes, it's actually a really solid game. And so there's a bunch of reasons why people love the Tales series. Obviously, when a lot of people talk about the Tales series, if they rave about anything, the first thing they'll usually rave about is the battle system, as Pat very clearly knows.
Yeah,
of course, the thing is about the battle system is it's very take it or leave it. Because it's action-focused, it's real-time,
It isn't what you see is what you get.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, you usually have a party, but that party, unless you switch between characters, is AI controlled. Which can be a bit of a pain if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons. The other reason that people love the series is character progression. Characters in this series grow and change as the games go on. They usually, at first, will seem like generic, you know, anime JRPG characters, but they end up having a lot of hidden sides to them that you don't see coming. You know, a character who, you know, you may have thought was just some silly cloud cuckoo lander may have, in fact, have turned out to be, you know, behind some traumatic thing that happened in a character's past, you know, stuff like that. And the third reason that people love this series, and really this is because of all others, the basic MO of the Tales series is to stitch together as many JRPG and anime cliches that you can, and then a few hours into it, take hold of the game and tear it to shreds. Deconstruction is what I'm talking about. Deconstruction. Deconstructing common tropes that JRPGs have. Things like, for example, religion. Organized religion, or, you know, the idea of there being a sort of black and white good and evil world, and coming to terms with the fact that, in fact, the world's a lot more morally ambiguous than we like to admit. Or, like, for example, Tales of Symphonia takes the idiot hero trope that JRPGs and anime love and rips it to shreds. Tales of Vesperia, in particular, talks a lot about, deconstructs a lot of the concept of player-focused morality. You know, because you make some big decisions in that game, and the game actually makes you question, you know, what right do you have to make these decisions that will affect people that you may never see. Really heavy stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you never see it coming, because the way these games are designed, it's meant to look as
entry-level.
As entry-level as possible. And then it just, you know, it just takes, it grabs the carpet, you know, rips it right out from under your feet.
Yeah. After you played a few of them, though, you kind of start to expect it.
Yeah.
Then it becomes more a matter of not whether they're going to deconstruct it, but how they're going to do it.
Like, I finished Tales of Zestiria recently, and, you know, the big thing about Tales of Zestiria in particular, like, it goes through, like, a bunch of different type of topics. Organized religion in particular is one of them. So, hold on. I have to go to TV Tropes for this one. Because they say it better than I possibly could.
They're good at that.
Yeah. So it's the video game section of the Deconstructor Fleet. And they've got a whole bunch of stuff about the Tales series. Like it says here, Tales of Zestiria basically, it takes on the... Okay, here's what I was looking for. It takes on the messianic archetype. You know, the concept of an incorruptible, pureness type character.
Yep.
And it demonstrates very clearly how hard it is to keep such that type of purity going. You know, and it ends up also showing that sometimes there is no third way. You know, there are sometimes, you know, the sort of taking a third option where it's like, okay, you know, I don't want to kill this guy, and I don't want to give up to him. Isn't there some middle ground? But as the game will show you, sometimes, no, there isn't.
Yeah.
One of the characters early in the game is that for some people, death is sort of a mercy. And that's one of the things that you have to come to terms with in this game.
Hmm.
Oh, also another thing that game does really good, Broken Bridge. Basically, you can actually go, if you start enough early in the game, you can actually go to where the end boss of the game actually is. And if you manage to beat him, you get a very, very bad ending. Because, as you later find out, he's not actually the big bad of the game.
Hmm.
I'm not going to say who it is, because you'll turn out it's a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
One
of these days, they're just going to, like, make that the actual ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they've done that before. You know, and also, like, for example, I'm playing Tales of Exilia right now, and one of the things about the Tales of Exilia is that one of the main characters you play is basically a demigod, and the thing about her is that she acts basically how you would expect a demigod who doesn't know how to act around humans would act.
Hmm.
She's very literal-minded. She's very almost autistic in her mannerisms.
Hmm.
You know, she talks about, like, you know, she sits down with the party for a meal and she says, "I very much enjoy ingesting calories with you." Stuff like that. So if you ever come across one of these Tales games in your local game shop, those are the reasons to play them.
Yeah.
It usually takes a little bit for it to take on, but once it does.
Yeah, you have to give it about 6 hours.
Yeah.
So
and fortunately, you know, even though they start off kind of entry-level generic, they usually tell it pretty well. So, yeah. You know, you're pretty much along for the ride either way. But basically, the one thing I would advise is don't trust anything you see at the beginning, because more than likely it's a lie.
Yeah.
So, that out of the way, Bleach, the manga, officially ended.
Yep.
It is now the only, you know, that is the third of what they used to call the big four of Shonen Jump. Is now gone. The only one left is One Piece.
Has a good amount of time left to it, from what we understand.
Yeah. It used to be One Piece, Naruto, Bleach, and Reborn. Those were the top four. Reborn was the first one to go, then went Naruto, and now Bleach. So Pat has some thoughts.
Yeah. Well, first off, on the ending itself, it was about as perfect as it could be under the circumstances. I think Soul Madness in particular did a really good job of capturing it in not necessarily animated form, but something you can watch rather than just read.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend anyone who hasn't experienced the ending yet to get it that way, because mm-hmm. that's I think they did more justice to it than the treatment that it could have gotten in the pages of Jump. So once again, it's what I thought it was. It was focusing more on events on Earth rather than the stuff in Soul Society that got covered in the previous chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, everyone's gathering at Ichigo's house 10 years later to watch Chad in some boxing championship match, which is pretty ridiculous because even though Chad has always been a really low-tier character in the scope of the rest of the Bleach cast,
mm-hmm.
Him becoming a boxer is kind of like Saitama becoming a boxer. It's just so OP that it's ridiculous. So that's amusing, and apparently he's had this very illustrious career.
It's like Mike Tyson.
Beating up on baseline humans. If we want to put it like it is. Ichigo and Orihime have a kid, Kazui. And Renji and Rukia have a kid, Ichika. And that meeting sort of between those two kind of closes out the series. For one thing, though, Rukia and Renji are terrible parents. They lose track of Ichika on their way to the Kurosaki Clinic. Mm-hmm. And when Ichigo calls them out on it, they're not worried, Rukia in particular, because, well, if her only opponents are humans, then she'll just kill them easily. So, yeah, that was interesting. Meanwhile, with Kazui, it's more like Ichigo and Orihime are too good of parents, because Orihime uses the Shinshin Rika to keep tabs on Kazui, which are these six fairies that basically do her bidding and have shown various crazy-ass abilities over the course of the series. And now she's just using them to spy on her kid.
Yep.
He is screwed in a few years.
No privacy whatsoever.
None.
Nope.
Aizen got a little bit of interesting character development in delivering the closing monologue of the series, and he was actually an interesting choice to deliver it at all. And it shows that even he has changed a little bit, because I think the Aizen that delivered that particular speech would probably not have done the things that set the first half of the series into motion. Hmm. But the final chapter does show him locked back up in Muken, probably continuing to serve his 18,000-year sentence that he got for the first half of for carrying out the first half of the series, which kind of gives him a raw deal compared to similar characters who maybe not completely change sides, but at the very least show some signs of a change of heart over time. So I thought that was a little bit odd. The opening picture has Kazui kind of just goofing off around the visored garage. And I can't be the only one who noticed by Hiyori's clothing, particularly her hat, that she works at the Unagi-ya restaurant, which has to be interesting for all kinds of reasons. But it definitely left plenty to cover in what I hope is one last fan book to come, because hopefully Jump will at least let Kubo tie up loose ends through raw information.
By the way, did they make that super special announcement that was supposed to be made?
Yes. Bleach will begin starting next year, or maybe 2018, I'm not sure. A live-action movie franchise starring Sota Fukushi.
Oh.
Who is tokusatsu fans will know as Kamen Rider Forze.
Right.
And I have a lot of trouble picturing Sota Fukushi as Ichigo. he is taking up the role of a fiercely loyal character who still would say that an elbow to the face is a fully acceptable answer for a good friend who is just too much of a morning person. After having played a fiercely loyal friend who is very much a morning person and probably could have benefited from the occasional elbow to the face.
Probably.
So,
good work.
It'll be interesting to see. There are other characters that he probably could have gotten the role, probably should have gotten the role of before Ichigo, but I figure he could make it work.
Yeah.
He was entertaining in Kamen Rider Forze. I'm sure he'll be entertaining here. So I hope they retain a good chunk of the actors from the stage musicals. Ryoma Baba was an excellent Aizen. Yuka Hirata as Unohana was just about perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they can retain some of the stage cast because they did a really good job.
Yeah.
So did they give any hint? Is anyone given any hint of what TJ Kubo's plans are now?
I haven't actually checked, to be honest.
I would not be surprised if he just decides to take a year off.
Oh, I could only imagine.
Yeah, maybe he'll, who knows, maybe he'll get a chance to go back to Zombie Powder and finish up what he wanted to do there. As you don't know, Zombie Powder is the series he did before Bleach.
Yeah.
The only
problem is Jump also owns it, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah.
I don't know if things have just soured between Kubo and Jump to the point where they're not going to be working together anymore, or if this was just a kind of temporary setting aside of production. But my gut feeling is that if Kubo works on something else in the future, he's going to show up elsewhere. Just because I don't see a series being forced to the finish line the way Bleach was, and there not being some very real animosity between creator and publisher.
Yeah. I mean, he could do it independently now. It's like,
yeah,
he's got the fan base for it. So,
he does.
You know, doesn't need big publishers to do this anymore.
Now that would be an interesting route for him to go.
Yeah. He probably, you know, since he works with Jump, which is owned by Soeisha, since, you know, they're technically in the same building space, he might end up jumping ship over to Shogakukan, you know, and working on, you know, weekly Shonen Sunday.
Never know.
Or a big comic cool. Or one of those places. All right, so... Yeah, Bleach.
On the subject of manga, and this wasn't in the show notes, but there was an announcement in some magazine, also this week, I believe, that Aizawa is now in good enough health that she feels like she can. Well, actually, she doesn't just feel like she can. She's announced that she will finally resume the Nana series for those who enjoy shoujo manga.
Now that's
Masters.
Oh yeah, that was of all the shoujo manga that came over here, that one was particularly popular.
Yeah. The art is fantastic. She knows how to write characters really well, and it just kind of came to an abrupt halt as health issues became an issue.
That unfortunately is not uncommon with manga.
No,
artists,
it isn't.
Because work schedules they tend to work are not
sane.
Like, I mean, it was like, for example, Osamu Tezuka, it wasn't unusual for him to, you know, not only sleep like maybe at a maximum 4 hours a night, if at all. One of the creators of Doraemon, once said that he worked for 72 hours straight, and he said that by the end of it, paper was just kind of floating off of the desk.
Ooh. So that's not good.
No.
Well, definitely not because he died in 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Bleach, I guess we're going to miss it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to take me a while to find a series that can fill that void.
Well, One Piece is right there waiting for you.
It is. I'm only a few episodes into it. There are things I like. There are things I don't.
Yeah.
It'll definitely get its shot with me. That's no question.
Yeah. And like I said, the Bakemonogatari series is also there.
Yep.
That is definitely worth a watch. Okay.
I definitely need to clear my head before I step into that one, though.
Yeah.
As for Nana, it had been on hiatus for, I think, 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So,
there's also Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah. That was,
that's the same guy who did Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
He's married to Naoko Takeuchi, creator of Sailor Moon.
That I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not what I was thinking. It was,
Yoshihiro Togashi. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Riku Sanjo, who did Beat the Vandal Buster.
Yeah, he
is now back to doing that after having laid down several tokusatsu series himself.
Kamen Rider Double Drive. Did he get a different artist? Because the reason the series had originally went on hiatus is because the artist had been having health problems. But I guess if he's managed to get back with him, that's cool. Hunter Hunter, however, is Yoshihiro Togashi, and that one is first of all, and it should be pointed out, Hunter Hunter is a great series. It's a fantastic series. It's probably the greatest deconstruction of the shonen manga genre ever. But the problem is that it's notorious for going through these numerous hiatuses. And a lot of people think it's partly because... honestly, I guess it's just because Yoshihiro Togashi don't play that. and also, you know, he's married and has a child, and he's wanted to have a good home life, and I guess he managed to badger and cajole the people at Showa Isha to allow him to do all that.
Is the current version of Hunter x Hunter a reboot?
Nope. Same series.
Okay. So I remember seeing that way, like, 5-10 years ago.
No, it's same series.
Okay.
It's just that series is weird as hell. So the idea that you thought it might be a reboot is understandable.
I know we've seen a lot of series get that, like Full Metal Alchemist got like a reboot sort of thing.
Well, it was the same series. Well, the Full Metal Alchemist, the original manga, still went to completion. You're thinking about the anime, which was Full Metal Alchemist and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Brotherhood is the difference was that the first anime had the same problem that a lot of anime based on ongoing manga have, which is that because of the nature of manga serialization, they had to kind of, and you know, their budget and their ratings started to run out, they kind of had to go in a different direction. Kind of like what Game of Thrones is having to do right now.
Yeah, they ran out of source material.
Yeah.
Well, except they at least got to talk to the creator and he told them what's up.
She told them what's up.
Yeah,
creator Full Metal Alchemist is a woman.
I'm talking about Game of Thrones.
Oh, right. R. Martin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now with that, we need to, this is something that Pat showed us that I've done. So,
this is something I stumbled upon on my Facebook feed.
Yeah. So, over on, there's this little Flash game that you can go to. It's called fiscalship.org, and it's a Flash, little budget Flash game that is specifically about learning how the federal budget of the United States works and sort of how, you know, the purpose of the game is to sort of, you get like this series of three goals that you get to choose from, and then you're given all this stuff that goes into the federal budget, stuff like, you know, transportation and infrastructure, taxation, military foreign policy, stuff like that.
Basically, you set your platform and then you set your policies.
Yeah, and the goal is to try and get all of your goals solved while at the same time balancing the budget. So that, because the way that it starts out is it's based on what current real life estimates are, that eventually the gap between the budget and annual earnings will be so big that it'll just sort of go off the charts. And so you're basically asked to balance it out and to get all of your goals accomplished at the same time. So, Pat, let me ask.
But, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I was fixing to ask, what three goals did you set out to do first?
Let me look at the list again because I was just really tired.
It was probably the same as mine. Mine was invest in the future, widen the social safety net, and what's the last one? Reduce inequality.
And mine was reduce inequality. Let's see. Strengthen social safety net. And, yeah, I was probably invest in the future.
Now, there was actually a fourth. I did two.
Or no. There was reduce inequality, fight climate change.
Yeah.
And I'm just going through them again now. And
for the record, we should point out, although those are the three main, there are only three particular goals that you can choose from that you can choose in total. Depending on how you go at
you'll
the
end, you'll get grades on all of them.
Yeah. So, like for example, I did two different playthroughs, and the one difference between them is that I had one where I had widened the social safety net, and I had another one where it said protect the elderly.
Yeah.
And the thing is, depending on how you do, those were like my four main goals, even though I could only do three of them at a time. And the second one where I did, inequality, social safety net, and invest the future, I also managed to get the 3-star for protect the elderly as well. So, yep.
Mine were fight climate change, strengthen social safety net, and reduce inequality.
Did you manage to accomplish all of them?
Oh, yes.
All right. So there's a killer. There's a silver bullet to start this off when you do this. And what is it? Institute VAT, value added tax.
Yeah.
First thing. Oh, first of all, I need to point this out. This game basically proves that the 15% flat tax is bullshit. Because even if you do nothing, if the first thing you do is install the flat tax, the freaking thing goes right off the charts immediately. And there's nothing you can do to bring it back down.
Yeah.
That's the flat tax thing that a lot of Republicans have tried to install, have wanted to vote, and you quickly find out, it's bullshit. Yeah. It does not work at all. So basically, I managed to 3-star all of my goals. And basically what I ended up doing was I had to – well, the first thing I did was I put in a VAT, a value-added tax, which is – I'm pretty sure you guys up in Canada have that, don't you?
You know, we have GST, but yeah, it's the same idea.
Yeah.
UK has that.
Yeah, pretty much every other industrialized nation in the world has that, except the U.S. We have the sales tax. And so what that does is you put in the VAT and it drastically lowers, the gap between the two. But the problem is immediately what it'll do is it'll affect all those three goals negatively. So then what you do is you go in and first big thing, basically you slash the military budget.
Yep.
Basically have the number of soldiers, withdraw from various foreign territories.
Spend a few hundred billion dollars less blowing things up in the Middle East.
Yeah. stop building new aircraft, reduce the number of new aircraft carriers being built, kill that fighter plane thing that's basically a real-life money hole. Also, as far as things like law enforcement are concerned, you have to basically end stuff like the war on drugs and things like that.
And then that saves you some money.
Yeah, and then you institute, one of the things I did was I instituted a tax on sugary drinks.
I didn't do that.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I did first. It actually affected inequality negatively, so I took it back. And instead, I replaced it with the tax on cigarettes, increasing it, which did really well. And then, of course, you institute all of your, you know, all your social democratic policies you want, you know, helping the, you know, things like, you know, 2 years tuition of free public college, you know, expanding the safety net, you know, putting a lot more money in Medicare, stuff like that. Basically, what this game tells you is a couple of things. First, it tells you, like I said, 15% flat tax is bullshit, and it doesn't matter what your policy is. It's going to fuck up the economy.
Yep.
Number two, trickle-down econ is also bullshit. That should go without saying. And number three, we waste our money on a lot of really stupid shit.
Yeah, no, really.
Our military budget is drastically overblown in ways that are obscene. And you realize, you know, and here's the other thing. This game also sort of, you know, gets rid of some other myths too, like what was the one? I think there was something about I'm trying to remember what it was. It's one of those Republican talking points. They think if it's something or other that it will reduce the budget that we can put. It actually doesn't affect the budget all that much. But the one thing this thing did teach me is that we could have all of the benefits of, you know, a Canadian or an Englishman, you know, that they get from their governments. You know, it's complicated, and it isn't entirely easy, but it is doable.
Yep.
You know? And it's being fucked up by cronyism.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, like, if we had a value tax, here's the thing. The people who talk about the value added, the, you know, the VAT tax is, they think that if you institute it, what it's do is going to make prices go up. But actually, like, they have, like, okay, he said, you know, Phil said they have a GST, which is basically the same thing as a VAT tax, just with a different name. Prices actually went down.
Yeah, here they didn't. But we may be a special case, because here we're taxed twice.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have basically the price, then we get the sales tax, and then we get the GST on top of the sales tax.
Also, yeah. Don't all the price tags in your country actually include the tax and the prices?
No, they don't.
They don't?
Nope.
Oh, fuck.
See, I think that should be the law everywhere.
Yeah, it should be.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, if you want to sort of learn how the federal budget works in the United States, give this game a shot. It'll probably, you know, it'll probably help, you know, defeat a lot of myths you may have had.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, to wind up for tonight, we are coming back once again to Gamer Mag Remembrances, and this time we are going to revisit the official premier magazine
issue,
the premier issue specifically, of the sadly short-lived Sega Dreamcast.
Official Dreamcast magazine episode.
It's a good it was a good magazine too.
Yes, it was genuinely good. And so, yeah, this magazine was specifically based around the Dreamcast, and this one in particular, this first magazine, was had the Dreamcast actually the Dreamcast had actually already,
It had not launched.
It had not launched yet. Okay, so this was still conjecture at this point.
Well, no, it was hype. I mean, it was the official magazine. They were getting information straight from Sega, and it released, I think, about a month ahead of launch, maybe a little before that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, it's basically a primer for the launch.
Yeah.
And information on what's to come from there.
Should understand about half of this turned out to be bullshit.
Yeah, the launch lineup shed a few games into the following weeks.
Yeah, 19 games at launch, that didn't happen. 56K modem, yeah, all that
it did happen. And...
Yeah. 128-bit graphics, nobody actually cared, but they were good.
That was back when, that was back still when people were still talking about bits. You know, that was a...
this was sort of the tail end of the bit depth era.
Yeah. If you're a modern gamer now, it seems really silly, but that was kind of how systems sold themselves back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because we were still used back then we were still used to pixels.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cutting edge were basically polygons.
Yeah, the way that all was kind of presented to us as gamers was that was power, was the bit.
Yeah.
Well, that technically doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. As the Jaguar proved.
Yeah. So, first thing we got here is the welcome message from Simon Cox, who was the editor-in-chief. So, following from that, we have some stuff about Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, they were really proud of that review.
Yeah. Oh, man. That game, I have really fond memories of that game, but I do realize it's partly through rose-tinted glasses.
My experience with Sonic Adventure was kind of tainted.
Yeah.
Because I was one of the unfortunate people who had one of the first run copies of it with the warped disc.
Oh,
you poor thing.
Yeah. So
I heard about those but never encountered them.
Yeah, I had one.
So I will always forever and after, I will always have my views of Sonic Adventure tainted by that Game Grumps playthrough with poor Aaron Hansen losing his mind while he's trying to catch Froggy out in the, I think it's the Emerald Coast section.
Yeah.
And that horrible sliding guitar is going on in the background.
Seriously, what were they thinking?
Alright, so next to that, we got Sega Rally 2.
Arguably one of the best games of the launch.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic racing game.
Hmm.
They also had some little bit of thing in a little side window here about the FEMU, which I think we need to kind of explain what the FEMU was. It was a little...
It was a memory card with a screen and D-pad and a couple of buttons on it.
Yeah. It was like if your memory card thought it was, you know, a Game Boy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it connected and you could do stuff with it.
Yeah, and you can connect two of them together.
Like for specifically data. If you were playing Sonic Adventure, that was where you did stuff with your Chow.
Yeah.
It's like a PS1 memory card, but with a Tamagotchi in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the record, they got rid of that feature with Sonic Adventure 2.
Yeah.
So
they just put that in the game itself.
Alright. So, then we got the table of contents. Then what have we got here? We got Shenmue, Sonic Adventure, Dreamcast, and of course the Dreamcast 101. That was the feature. Yeah, Shenmue took a little while to come out.
Yeah. You think?
It started out as a Saturn game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we all know that. And, wow.
Well, technically it started out as a Virtua Fighter game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, quote-unquote Virtua Fighter RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which makes sense, because character looks a lot like Akira.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was like a chibi version of Akira.
Yeah.
Eventually later they'd make that game anyway.
Yeah. Does anybody know where these bunch of sailors hang out? I'm looking for some sailors. All right, so let's see. What else we got? We got Dreamcast Direct. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I keep thinking, like, in Shenmue 3, that whole bit might get revisited somehow, but in a more self-aware way.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, he Suzuki has got to do that. Yeah. He's got to own that.
Well, I mean, it's basically, you know, it's... Well, no, never mind. I was fixing to say it's got Dreamcast. It's got Kickstarter stuff behind it, but...
Yeah.
I have no doubt that that's going to come up at some point, though. I mean, it's been, what, like 15 years now?
And obviously people still won't shut up about it.
So. Yeah.
Well, every live stream that Yu Suzuki has done, if you watch the chat, it always comes up.
Yeah, the sailor stuff comes up. So he knows he has to.
Yeah.
Okay, so table of contents. We got Dreamcast Direct, Fantasy Zone, Crazy Taxi, Dreamcast World, Profile for Shinya Nishigaki, Creator of Blue Stinger, which
speaking of Daily Premonition, this is like a predecessor.
That was like the Resident Evil version of Deadly Premonition. God, and that game.
My launch lineup was a warped copy of Sonic Adventure and Blue Stinger. I didn't have a very good impression of the Dreamcast.
And Ready to Rumble with audio glitches.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I didn't come to that though.
And the thing is, freaking Blue Stinger had a bunch of hype behind it too.
Yeah,
I mean it was going to be one of the killer apps of the system.
Yeah. Mm.
And then, of course, they got Shenmue coming soon.
two more years.
Dreamcast 101, Sonic Adventure Super Test, Dreamcast Nation, and How to Beat Sega Rally. All right.
I think we're reading a different issue.
Are we? Because this is what you linked to.
In the chat?
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh.
Let me see.
Because the how-to on mine shows Supersonic.
Oh, okay. No, okay, here's the problem. You're looking at the one we're looking at is that you originally linked to was issue zero.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one you're talking about is issue one.
Yeah.
You want to do issue one instead?
I didn't know there was an issue zero.
Would you prefer we do issue one instead?
Yeah.
All right, well.
Okay.
No, just leave that. Well, just
Sorry
leave that stuff. Leave it in there. Don't worry about it.
Sorry about
All right.
that.
Yeah. So at this point, folks, we're moving over to issue one. We're going to leave that
All
other
this
stuff
time
in.
I had no idea. We were describing largely the same things that I saw, except there were some inconsistencies.
Yeah.
But, yeah, weird.
All right, so let's... Oh, God.
I encountered an issue zero. I had no idea it was a thing.
Apparently.
Yeah, it's also a picture of Sonic.
Yeah, they both have a picture of Sonic on the cover, so...
It's like 128-bit, 56K modem.
It's the same cover.
Yeah.
And it's just changed from 19 games at launch to 12+.
So, oh, God, we got an ad. Who remembers this? Ready to Rumble? Boxing game.
One of the few playable games on the demo disc.
Yeah. And in hindsight, extremely racist.
Yeah.
Some racist stereotypes.
I think a lot of games cut from that cloth were back then.
Yeah, that was Punch Out. They're doing that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Except you also had Michael Jackson.
Yeah. So yeah, they actually do have a lot of stuff from issue zero in this issue. They got what they call the D-Day Survival Guide for getting your Dreamcast when it comes out. Tips, codes, and strategies for Sonic Adventure. So pretty much everything we just mentioned is basically here.
Just slight differences.
Yeah. So
which
then
is
we've
why
got...
I was sitting here really confused.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we've got the mail section.
Yeah, D-mail. It's the mail.
God, that is so stupid. Let's see. We got an ad for, Fighting Force 2.
We've talked about this before on the show.
That game was a horrible disappointment.
Yeah.
Compared to the insanely fun predecessor.
Yeah, so let's not spend any more time on that than
All
we
right.
do.
So, then we got... a thing for next issue saying we're weighing it at 1,000 megabytes. The GD-ROM. That's the demo disc, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, GD-ROM is just...
the disc format itself.
Yeah, okay. Why didn't they... God damn it.
A gigabyte on one...
God damn it, Sega.
Yeah, gigabyte disc.
But they talked about some playable demos. They got Virtua Fighter 3 TB, Ready to Rumble, Trick Style, Dynamite Cop. Pretty sure, and of course, I think Sonic Adventure was on there, too. In fact, yeah. I know it was on there because I got that Dreamcast with that demo disc. Ad for Blue Stinger.
Yeah.
Curse you, Activision.
Got my hopes up, Activision, and then I ended up with Sonic Adventure, Blue Stinger, and Trick Style.
Ow.
At least Trick Style had a VMU game that was Snake, so at least I had something.
Yeah, true.
Good. Yeah.
In fact, I think that was one of the taglines from my review of Trick Style over on Game Addicts Network.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was all bad. It did have a VMU port of Snakes on it. That's one of my favorites.
All
right. Oh, I got to dig up some of those old reviews sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. So we got DC Direct. Basically, them just prattling on some more.
Yeah.
And then we go to the next page. We got peripherals.
Yes.
And if there's one thing the Dreamcast had, it was a shit ton of peripherals at launch.
Yeah, which is weird.
To this day, I have two of those Age Tech sticks.
Yeah, they got two arcade. They got the Tremor Pack, which I guess was just their Rumble Pack.
Yeah.
Quantum Fighter Pad, the Act Labs RS, which was a racing wheel, a light gun. Another racing pad, another rally wheel, and the
Astro.
Did
anything on the Dreamcast even use a light gun?
I don't think it did.
House of Dead 2.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that one. That one.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? We got a thing for MDK. There's a series I haven't heard about in a long time.
I miss that series. That series was really good.
That was an Interplay joint, wasn't it?
Yeah, Interplay and Shiny. Remember them?
Yeah, that was... The MDK series was special.
Yes, to say the least.
Yeah. Kind of like... It had this really dark atmosphere, and it was also really funny.
Yeah.
Sega, at least the next couple pages, we got Sega's F355 Challenge.
That was a good game.
That was an arcade.
Yeah, eventually did show up on the Dreamcast.
The Separated at Birth. Ryo Hanzaki and Tom Cruise from Top Gun. Which,
why?
Well, I mean, if you look at the jacket, but I mean, yeah, that the game takes place in the mid-80s, so.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Let's see. Oh, we got some merch. Memorabilia. We got some nice Virtua Fighter figures. I think a rather, shall we say... spine-breakingly awesome figure of Sarah Bryant.
She has no innards.
No.
None. They're gone.
Women's backs don't work like that way, folks.
No.
Matter how much we wish they did.
Her lungs must be in her boobs or something.
Yeah.
Well, something's got to take up all the space. Because there's certainly not enough space in her ass.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Her legs are too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, Japan, but this wasn't.
Let's just say Japan.
Yeah, let's just say Japan and move on. They got a Ray Shinhua figure, Sonic Adventure backpack, Giant Graham Vimu, Sonic toys.
Yeah.
All right.
Some fun stuff.
Some fun stuff, yeah. Oh yeah, I remember this. The Sonic Underground TV show.
And they sound so hopeful about it.
Yeah.
I think this was before any of them actually saw what.
Yeah, well, it obviously.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, people were kind of excited because remember, this was coming off of Saturday. This is a Sonic Saturday morning, which was
which
amazing.
Yeah.
And the other funnier cartoon, which was okay. God.
Nope. Just didn't work out.
We're bastards.
Yeah.
All right, and then we
just see the hopeful tone of that blurb, and it almost makes you wish you could have a time machine so you could go back and warn them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on the next page, we've got another example of, 1990s video game ads.
Mm. Crazy.
For TNN Motorsport Hardcore Heat.
Mm.
Friggin' 90s.
Yeah.
Let's see, Dreamcast Japan. Dreamcast Europe. Oh, we got an ad for Power Stone. Oh, that game was good.
That game was good.
That is another series that needs to come back.
Yes. Yeah.
And apparently a lot of people have been asking Capcom to bring it back.
Yeah.
That could actually go somewhere now.
Yeah, it could actually go somewhere. There's impetus for it, and let's just hope they don't release a half-finished game with barely working online functionality.
Yeah.
Not that I'm bitter.
Just do a proper remaster with online play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we start there.
Let's see.
I advocated for a Power Stone 3 on a recent Sound Off video, so I'm completely on board.
Oh, yeah. All right, so next
and they
up
want to
got
do remasters all the time anyway.
Yeah. So next up we got what at the time Sega was calling Project Ares. Now, Pat, you're the JRPG expert. Do you recognize this?
Skies of Arcadia.
Yes.
Yep, that's what it turned into.
Ace.
Well, over here, it went on to Japan as Eternal Arcadia.
Yeah. Probably one of the most criminally underrated JRPGs ever.
Hmm.
God, that
this, largely this one needs
it's
to
two
get
systems were the Dreamcast and the GameCube.
Yep.
Not exactly hospitable ground for JRPGs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so it just that game turned out to be great. Another franchise needs to come back, or at least come back over here to America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the West, to the English speaking world.
I'd be totally happy with a Steam port of the original.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Just saying.
All right, next we got a couple pages about GameWorks, which is a giant arcade in Seattle, Washington that Sega owned.
Not anymore.
But they did back then.
Yeah, and it looked awesome.
Oh, yeah. And next up we got Crazy Taxi.
Yes.
That
father
game,
of the Burnout series, pretty much.
Yeah. If there was anything on the Dreamcast that could be considered a sleeper hit, it was this one.
Yeah.
And partly due to all of the popularity in the arcades.
Yeah, the arcades. And it was quick. It was easy to get into. Had a great punk soundtrack.
Yes.
In spring. Bad Religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My only complaint about the soundtrack to Crazy Taxi was that there wasn't more of it.
Yeah.
No. They didn't even use the complete songs.
Nope. Yeah.
This is I thank this game for basically introducing me to punk rock and not pop punk. I mean, like actual
real punk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This was the first game I played with an actual stereo system.
Mm. Well, you picked a good one.
Yeah.
All right, and let's see. Oh, we got an ad for Soul Calibur. This was the sequel to, well, everybody knows what Soul Calibur is.
Yeah.
But it was, Soul Blade. Well,
Soul
originally
Blade. Soul Edge.
Soul Edge in the arcades. Soul Blade on PlayStation 1.
Yeah. This was the game that reinstated my faith in the Dreamcast because I got a copy of it a week later.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, who here remembers the theme for Soul Blade?
You know, me.
Yeah.
Wee! Ah! You know.
Yeah.
We shine on the sea. We got on a journey. It was dumb English lyrics, but
it kind of loses something when you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, they had, like, amazing 15 frames a second FMV.
Yeah.
So nothing actually looked smooth. But that
it was such a good intro that nobody cared.
Yeah.
All right. And next up, we got an interview with Yuji Naka. The man himself.
Yeah.
Poor bastard.
Again, if you had a time machine, you could go back and warn him.
Tell him.
Stop. Just stop what you're doing. Just think.
I mean, you know, like, yeah, you did Nights, and that was awesome. Just, dude, you need to plan out how you're going to do this and how the series is going from here, because,
Yeah, you go back in time, but you bring your future Sonic Adventure disc with you, so you can show him your,
What you bring back in time is let's tap, tell him you're going to make a game about tapping on a box.
Because that happens.
Like, look, Yuji, you and the other guys might want to put Choo Choo Rocket aside for a little while because you know, there's a storm on the horizon.
Yeah, things are going to go south very quickly.
Say, we got a ad for Wild Metal. That is that is an old Rockstar game.
Yeah, very underrated.
Yeah. Back when, and also DMA, which would later become Rockstar North.
Yeah.
One of my favorite writers of all time, Alan Campbell, originally, before he became a novelist, he worked as a writer and programmer over at DMA. He worked on stuff like, he worked on, like, Grand Theft Auto 1, 2, and 3, stuff like that. Let's see. Next up, we got...
Yeah, they made Lemmings.
Yeah, they made Lemmings.
Yeah.
GTA guys made Lemmings.
Yeah. So, next up, we got that D-Day stuff, survival guide. Apparently, the dude running the register is smoking a cigar and wearing a rude piece.
Surly Bobby Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like... This is about the as 90s spread as you're ever going to see.
The guy shirt should big... probably say, that's my purse.
Yeah.
And here's a guy in a beanie. Got spike hair guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful that my launch experience with the Dreamcast looked nothing like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the guy is the veteran. The woman is the newbie.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
living in a pre-9/11 world.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So we got... And there says, like, you know, they got the judges. One of them is a video game veteran. Others a newbie. They're doing Sonic Adventure, Marvel vs. Capcom, Soul Calibur, Flag to Flag, House of the Dead 2.
Hey, let's go game for game on this and see which one's actually made launch.
Yeah. Okay,
so Sonic Adventure, that did, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Uber practically issued it. Marvel vs. Capcom, no, that fell to October.
Yeah. Let's see, after that we got Soul Calibur.
That was there.
That made it.
House of the Dead 2?
That did not.
It fell like a week, didn't it? Not far.
Not far. Flag to Flag also fell off launch.
Went on to be one of my favorite arcade racers on the system.
Of course, the quote-unquote newbie thinks shooting the zombies in House of the Dead is icky.
Yeah, she can stuff it, too. That was an awesome game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Flag to Flag. I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, that fell off long.
Okay, Armada.
That one... Not entirely sure. Yeah, I don't think that one didn't make launch.
All right.
King of Fighters was October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trick Style, which...
Yeah, that unfortunately did make sense.
And Blue Stinger, we know that one.
Yeah.
Tokyo Extreme Racer.
That one did make watch.
All right. TNN Hardcore Heat.
Also another unfortunately made launch.
Monaco Grand Prix.
That was launched. Hmm. Wasn't bad either.
Yeah.
It was on the demo disc and actually playable.
Yeah. Power Stone.
Made it.
Yep. Yeah. Hydro Thunder. Ooh, I remember
made
that.
It. I had that it on launch yeah. day.
That game.
It also had a bad disc issue.
Yeah.
A lot of the Midway stuff that was on the launch did.
Yeah, this was back when Midway was kind of going down the tubes.
Yeah, but they got some really this was bad discs, I think.
Yeah, this was just a Sega production plant problem.
Yeah. So then we got...
Stuck to Midway in particular royally.
Sega Sports NFL 2K.
Made it.
Made it.
Yep.
Mortal Kombat Gold.
Made it.
Yeah, that did make it.
So we kind of wish it did.
Well, it was MK4, but with more stuff, yeah. And nobody cared.
Blitz 2000 made it.
Yeah.
Look at what the newbie says for Mortal Kombat Gold. What's the point? It's easy enough to play, but there doesn't seem to be a lot more to it than cheesy characters and fatalities to memorize. It leaves me cold.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah, she totally got that one.
NFL Blitz 2000.
Yeah, that did make launch.
Air Force Delta.
Made it.
Made it.
Ready to Rumble.
Made it.
And
all right, so let's see. What were their top fives? Newbie picked Sonic Adventure, Ready to Rumble, NFL 2K, House of the Dead 2, and Hydro Thunder. Well, apparently, she's still got House of the Dead 2, even though
she found it icky.
Yeah.
Well, that's better... kink. Icky things.
So, Soul Calibur, the veteran got Soul Calibur, Sonic Adventure, NFL 2K, Power Stone, and Marvel vs. Capcom. Let's see, and what do we got? Reddit got next. They got the 9999 ad.
One of many.
Yeah.
Looks like a VR mask on him.
Again, this is the 90s, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It kind of looks like one of the vampires from Buffyverse on the top. It's like.
Again, 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Man so, yelling in ad.
That was the 90s.
Yeah.
All right. So up next we've got Virtua Fighter 3 TV.
Yeah, that was a good game.
It was Virtua Fighter 3.
It was Virtua Fighter 3, even though the Dreamcast port was kind of bastardized.
Yeah,
but it was the best home version you could get.
Yep.
So
and it still
we took it.
Still is.
Yeah.
I remember playing Virtua Fighter 3 in the arcades, and I freaking loved it. Because, I mean, that was one of those games they had on the big screen machines.
Yeah.
So it looked amazing. Yeah, what was the name of the old man?
Shun.
Shun, the one who's always drinking.
Yeah.
Doing a drunken monkey style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always loved his stage because his arena was like a platform made up of a bunch of random rafts out in the middle of a body of water.
Yep. And in the year 2016, the intoxication meter that Shun has spread to other franchises because in King of Fighters 14, Chin has it.
Yep.
Yep. Chin can.
All right.
Get drunk in the middle of a fight.
Let's see. After that, we got Sega Rally 2.
Yes.
It's like NASCAR, but with proper tracks and weather and mud. Lots and lots and lots of mud.
Yeah, basically.
And right turns.
Yes, and right, well,
right turns. That goes with the proper tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
NASCAR is coming around on that, but very, very slowly.
Yeah.
Let's see, then we got NBA 2000.
That did not make launch, but I guess they didn't advertise it. For.
All right.
I thought I'd seen it on some launch lists.
Resident Evil Code Veronica.
Yeah, that definitely didn't get to launch.
No.
It was a pretty solid game, but
for the Resident Evil games, it was pretty darn good.
Yeah, say But unfortunately,
ooh, vaporware.
Which one?
Castlevania Resurrection.
Oh God. Oh,
that's unfortunate. Actually,
that was a 3D Castlevania too.
Yeah, it was a 3D Castlevania game that was allegedly learning from Castlevania 64.
Was it the one?
Have been the one that didn't suck? We'll never know.
Yeah, as I mentioned in a previous episode, Castlevania 64 was supposed to be the true successor to the 2D games.
Yeah.
Symphony was just the spinoff.
Yeah. Nope.
So let's see, then we got an ad for Tokyo Extreme Racer.
Yeah. I actually liked that game. Except for the whole, you know, having to grind incessantly.
Well, isn't it just the wasn't it the English localization of Shitoko Battle?
Yep. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And then we got an ad for Hydra Thunder. Again, lots of fun.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they really, really wanted to pimp Hydra Thunder, and with
justifiably.
It was great in the arcade, and the Dreamcast port was actually quite good.
And then we got an ad for a VHS of Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie. This was the OVA.
I wish we didn't.
It was awful.
Yeah.
Ear-achingly awful.
Yeah.
And then right next to you got Green-Eyed Sonic.
Yeah. So.
See, we got.
That? No.
Let's see, what do we got? We got Coming Soon. We got Slave Zero.
Which was actually really good. I'll point that out.
Test Drive 6.
Which is not so good.
Yeah, and then we got the Green Eyes. Oh, God, it's one of those. Man, don't you hate it that, you know, you have a subscription to a magazine, and yet every issue is filled
with. It gives you subscription cards.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be a lot worse, but back in the day, I mean, it would take up like a third of the freaking magazine vault.
So how much were they asking here?
It was for, I think, a one-year subscription.
$48?
Yeah.
Those demo discs aren't cheap.
Yeah.
And remember, this was in late 90s money, so.
Yeah. So it's
another reason why the Dreamcast failed.
Let's see.
Magazine went down with the console.
All right, so after that we got Shenmue, a previous Shenmue, and again that one didn't come out for another couple years.
Yeah. At least they were wise enough to put a TBA on the release date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and then we got Street Fighter Alpha 3.
Yeah, one of the best games that ever came out in the Dreamcast.
Claiming or that it would
best
have
best games
all
that ever came out ever. You mean? Not.
Yeah.
Toy Commander.
I never played that game, and maybe I should have. I don't know.
I think I played a demo of it one time.
Say,
Sega. I recall virtually nothing of it, but yeah.
We got Sega Bass Fishing. One of those fishing games. Man, they really are popular in Japan, aren't they?
Yeah.
This was arcade fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They like them in Japan. By the way, $48 in 1999 is $66.48 in 2016.
Isn't that crazy to think paying that much for a magazine subscription?
That makes me feel so good about myself right now.
Yeah. I mean, nobody has subscriptions anymore.
Wouldn't be too much longer until you get the console for that much money.
Yeah.
Soul Fighter, further proof that you really can't get away with making a beat 'em up with no co-op.
Nope. Nope.
That is a party foul.
Yeah. Piggyback Interactive, publisher you've never heard of.
Echo the Dolphin, Defender of the Future.
Oh my god. That was an annoying game to play. I wanted
Didn't
to
that
like
later
it
get
so
ported
bad.
To the PS2?
Probably.
Yeah, I think it did.
I never really got the appeal of the Echo games.
The controls are kind of shitty, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they kind of.
It was just a.
Yeah, I wasn't
was
a fan
weird
of the original
games.
Yeah, the first one was heavily influenced by LSD. Like the second half of the game just goes nuts.
Not influenced enough.
The first game was really heavily influenced by Lisa Frank.
Well, I know that the pitch for that game was done at a drunken party, so you know you can figure that one out.
Yeah. So,
at no point between that and the actual release did somebody wearing a suit come in and say, "Hey, you know, guys, can we not?" You know,
my answer. My answer to that would be Japan.
Yeah, I mean, why?
Except that was an American. That was an American game.
Yeah, but it was sold to Japan.
Yeah. Why would they mix it when they made Seaman? I mean, come on.
Yeah,
see. Another Dreamcast exclusive, by the way.
Yeah.
See, next up we got Metropolis Street Racer.
I think this was the first AGR game. Yeah, that from Bizarre. That this was very ambitious.
I'm actually surprised that we never saw it re-released on like Xbox Live Arcade under the name Project Gotham Racing Zero or something.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it is.
Yeah. Imagine Sega owns that IP.
Alright, and then after that, we got Vigilante 8 Second Offense. This was the sequel to Vigilante 8. Never played the sequel. I did play the first one.
It's okay.
It's alright.
It's just okay. $9.99 again.
Oh, yeah. Second. Climax Landers.
Time Stalkers.
If you didn't have pictures of this, you could have a completely different idea of what this game is.
Yeah. Also sounds like a very, very bad sci-fi porn movie.
Wanted. Role-playing game with cheeky female party member, preferably in form-fitting attire. No experience points necessary.
Mm-hmm.
God, that's...
There we go.
You're right, that does sound like a porn. Very suggestive. Okay. So after that, what have we got? We got Dynamite Cop.
That wasn't terrible.
Voigan Brothers. That was the that was like one of those. It was a comedy.
It was a Mario 64 type game. Didn't come out until much later.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, did it even see the light of day?
It did. Yeah.
It did.
It was one of those that I burned.
Oh,
and
this
it was
is...
not worth my time.
Oh, this is sad. Midway, they got a whole thing on Midway.
Yeah, before they completely imploded.
Stuff about Ready to Rumble, Mortal Kombat, and once again, it's just...
It's funny because Midway had 4 games on the Dreamcast launch. Mm-hmm. Only one of them was good.
All right. Let's see, later we got another thing for Mortal Kombat Gold.
Yeah, we'll just get past that.
Cast 101, which I guess is talking about the tech and the hardware.
Yeah, which is now available in a cell phone.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Several times over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it talks a bit about the VMU, the junk pack, the modem. Yeah, that is something that Dreamcast should be given
credit for.
That was Peter Moore.
Yep. The infamous "you bet your ass" online plan matters.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's because of that and Sonic Team that we got Phantasy Star Online.
Yep.
The first console-based MMO.
How many hours did we spend playing that pet?
I don't even want to consider how many hours I put into that.
Us, Lee, a couple of the other Game Addicts people, we just had this whole micro community for PSO, and it was glorious. I loved it.
Yes.
Yeah. It was the last time I really enjoyed any kind of an MMO.
Yeah.
So.
And it was the Dreamcast who did it first.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's really kind of what one of the big tragedies, I think, of the Dreamcast is. It was so, groundbreaking in so many ways, and Sega just completely bungled it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we got more peripheral stuff. Another light gun. Oh, we got a fishing controller.
Yeah.
For Sega Bass Fishing.
Yeah, that was packed in with the bass fishing box.
Another rally wheel. Another rally wheel. And, okay, what do we got here next? Oh, it's, looks like it's just all the magazine people doing a big gaming night in.
Let's play.
Yeah,
yeah, one of the people on here is Simon Cox, who would later go on to work at 1UP towards the end.
Yep.
Yeah, he was the editor-in-chief for this thing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yep. I said that in the beginning.
Ah, thank you.
You people don't listen.
Well, dude, come
on. Bastards.
I read it earlier.
Need more caffeine.
Tires got silver.
Yeah.
All right. And, so up after that,
reminding you that it's it comes out $9.99 again.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Third time in the same damn magazine. All right. Then we've got the test zone now entering. So let's see. What are they playing? Sonic Adventure.
Yep.
Again, that is one of those moments you want to go back in time. You know, get a hold of Yuji Naka and tell him, you know, you got some good parts here, but
you're going to a bad place.
Yes. Stop.
Not
delay
a happy
the game
place.
6 months.
Stop. Delay the game. Put down Big the Cat. Okay, here's the funny thing about the
prejudice.
Okay, now here's the thing about the Big the Cat segments. They were actually one of the segments back in the day I kind of liked, and not because of the controls, because they were shit, but because I loved the atmosphere of them. Because like I've said before, I have a thing for, you know, I like the idea of beaches and, you know, nighttime bodies of water, but I hate real life beaches and I can't swim. So, all right. So, yeah,
like,
they get.
You love Wave Race, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, for each of these Sonic characters, it says favorite 90s moment. Big the Cat, 24-hour fast food drive-through, bought a clapper.
What is Sonic?
Sonic is starring in my own game and TV series.
He'd probably regret that, too.
Tails is turning down that Disney contract. Amy Rose is Lil' Affair, Pepper Spray, Backstreet Boys.
Oh, God.
Knuckles is grunge rock and attending the X Games.
God, this is so 90s.
I'm not sure, like, are we going to have to explain some of these to our younger listeners, or should we even
bother? Before we do that, E-102 Gamma, the robot who actually was one of my favorite characters in that game, favorite 90s moment, bearding, Randy Nelson.
Right, again, are we going to have to explain some?
Yes.
Probably just real quickly. Lilith Fair, that was a women-focused music festival. Had bands like, you know, L7 and, you know, Courtney Love.
Sarah McLachlan,
what was it?
Jewel,
Indigo Girls, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Grunge rock, well, everybody knows what grunge is. Vaughn, of course, this was the late 90s, so it...
Yeah, this was, 99, so it was pretty much when grunge had kind of run itself into the ground.
Yeah, and then we got post-grunge.
Yeah.
And then Big the Cat, 24, and the X Games. Was the...
No, that's still a thing.
Yeah,
it's still a thing, but it's not
that's
nearly...
That's an esports festival.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got... Now there's, like, rally cross racing and all kinds of stuff in the X Games and esports also. Yeah.
They do a rally that goes across, like, dirt tracks, but also, like, out into the parking lot. Shit like that.
This was weird. Back in the day when Tony Hawk was basically God.
Mm-hmm. This is when skateboarding was all over ESPN.
This was
ESPN.
Literally just a couple of months after he became God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He ascended to God.
Right around the time that he got his own game, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
He basically ascended to godhood, like Kefka. And a clapper. I'm surprised that people still don't know what a clapper was.
Watch Wayne's World. Yeah. At the beginning of Wayne's World.
Yeah.
Basically, what it was is it was this thing you could attach to, you know, a light fixture or whatever, and you could turn them on and off by clapping.
It's a predecessor to our smart lights.
The flapper.
I can use your phone to turn off your lights.
And Randy Nelson. Somebody's going to have to explain that one because I don't remember that one.
Yeah, I don't either. Oh, well.
And then we got more Sonic Adventure stuff. Oh, they got a second opinion down here. Let's see what that says. Sonic Adventure is, in every way, a work of art. The graphics are simply the best I've ever seen. The characters look unbelievably good, and the levels are designed with creator Yuji Naka's trademark flair for hidden depth and replay value. It's a little easy to get through it as Sonic. It takes just 6 hours if you're not a complete loser. But like a fine glass of wine, this is one to savor, not chug like a cheap beer. It's a truly awesome adventure and a perfect intro to the power of the Mighty Dreamcast. And it ended up getting a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
Let's see. Then we
Randy
got...
Nelson is a generic enough name that Google can't figure out what it's a reference to.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Keeps bringing up Randy Newman.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's keep
moving on from that. We got an ad for Monaco Grand Prix. House of the Dead 2.
Shooty, shooty, bang, bang.
Yes. Blood and...
We'll get better with the keyboard.
You can actually at least shoot a child.
zombie child.
No, it was a child. And
good co-op game.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the funnest games in the arcades.
Yeah.
And this was back when I was a complete pussy and was terrified of the zombies as they got closer to the screen.
Yeah. Just made you shoot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
All right. We got a thing. We got an ad for Trick Style.
This would be a Kinect game if it was made 10 years later.
Yeah,
and it would be completely unplayable.
Yeah, it already was completely unplayable.
Yeah. Okay. Then we
Didn't
got
it
a house.
Recently rise from the dead on the, on Steam.
Probably.
It's on GOG, and I went ahead and actually, you know, got it.
With actual
and I
money.
Tried it out. Yeah. Well, it was 90% off, so I mean, it's like, what the hell?
Not much actual money, but still.
not much actual money, and you know what? This is a case where the Dreamcast port was botched.
Really?
Because the PC version, the controls are super tight. The game is actually really enjoyable. On the PC, but not on the Dreamcast.
No.
The Dreamcast just... has that second of delay in the responsiveness of the controls just kills any enjoyment that you would have.
Huh. That is interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
So after that, we got Outu for Sonic Adventure, how to get the emblems, all that stuff. Stuff about Chows.
Yeah. How to use your VMUs to do all that.
The Sonic
ad.
Network. Yeah, an IGN.com.
IGN ad.
Partner with EB Games.
You know, that ad is how I discovered IGN.
I think that's actually how a lot of people discovered IGN.
Yeah. I think they built quite a bit of their readership just by getting an ad in the first Dreamcast magazine.
I like his gaming chair. It's an inflatable chair.
Again, 90s. He's got the spiky hair with the frosted tips.
If you look at the Dreamcast, it's tilted, sitting on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is going on in this picture?
It's
like it's leaning on his foot.
After that, we got Dreamcast Network goes live.
It would be SegaNet by the time it was ready for prime time.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got a contest. We got a contest.
Still enter that.
Hydro Thunder Cab.
That would actually be an awesome prize.
Yes.
Win!
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. And, look at that. Look what we got over there on the other side. It's Alexander Hamilton. Crazy eyes.
Jack and the dead presidents.
Oh.
Get hooked up for less.
And to think, this was before Mr. Miranda finally revived his reputation.
Yeah. And the back cover, of course, we have an ad for Acclaim Sports.
Feel it.
All the way to the dustbin of history.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did such quality titles as Frank Thomas' Big Hurt, Baseball, and
NBA Jam.
Featured Gear, Quarterback Club 2000.
Yeah. NBA Jam, yeah, I'll give them credit for that. But that
they ruined it.
Well, yeah, they did, actually. They turned it into something it was not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, I do believe we have a show.
Yeah. Oh, I miss my Dreamcast.
And by show, I think we got a good 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, folks, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Join us next week. We have no idea what we're doing, but it'll be something. So for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Therese Sammet, I would like to say get some sleep out there and, you know, don't eat so much fried food, I guess.
Lies.